Welcome everybody for the Parsha class. Today we have the Parsha of Va'era. It is the year 5768. Unfortunately, we missed Parsha Shmos last week. We also missed Vayechi of the week before. I don't know if I can salvage Vayechi, but I'm going to try to combine Parsha Shmos with Parsha Va'era today. We are learning this year lessons from the Mesilas Yesharim, from the Path of the Just by Rabbi Lusato, and how these lessons relate to the various parshios. Good news, I found a quote from Parsha Shmos to connect with our class today. A really good one, a really meaty idea that relates to the Parsha. Parsha Shmos and Va'era are the beginning of the second book of the Torah, Shmos, which, as we know, is termed Exodus, which is the Latin translation of Geula. Geula, commonly translated as redemption. The sages assigned different names to each of the five books other than the names that we use commonly in Hebrew. Those are just the words that start the book off. Like Shmos is the second word of the book. But the sages assigned other names that have to do more with the theme, with the essential content. So this is the book of the Geula, of the redemption. Of course, in Parsha Shmos, we are not reading that much about redemption. We're reading about bondage. And the redemption of Egypt, Yetzias Mitzrayim, follows the bondage of Egypt. Shibud Mitzrayim, as we can call it. Shibud or Galus, there's various terms. Shibud means enslavement or subjugation. And that's followed by Geula, by redemption, by freedom. So what we're going to try to do today is we're going to try, based on the Mesilas Yesharim's Musar exposition and his definition of Musar concepts, we're going to try to get a deep understanding of what is real Shibud, what is subjugation, and what is Geula, what is redemption. Another term for Geula, by the way, we'll also use the term Chirus, which is freedom, slavery to freedom. So many different synonyms here, but we're going to try to understand deeply what that concept is. Pharaoh, from the moment that he turned against the Jews, that happened, we were told in the last week's Parsha, originally the Jewish people, the family of Yaakov and of Yosef, were very beloved and very respected in Egypt. But after they all died out, then everything changed, the climate changed, a new king arose. Who didn't know Yosef, the Torah says. And that's when the Shibud, that's when the bondage began. And it progressed increasingly worse. And we're mostly familiar with this as a story of ancient history. The Torah says that Pharaoh was afraid that we were going to band together with his enemies and overtake his people and drive him out of the land. And he didn't want that to happen. He was afraid that there was going to arise a man that was going to come and save them. And so he wanted to kill all baby boys. And there is a particular emphasis and a vengeance that Pharaoh seems to have when, as things got worse and worse, this man, who we know as Moshe, finally approaches him. And he says to him, this is in chapter 5, near the end of the Parsha, he introduces himself, Moshe, and together with Aaron, his brother, they say, Ko Amar Hashem Elokei Yisrael. This is what Hashem, the God of Israel, says. Shalach es ami, send my nation out. V'yachogu li b'midbar. And let them celebrate. Let them bring offerings to me in the desert. V'yomer Paro. Paro says, Mi Hashem asher eshma b'kolo. Who is Hashem that I should listen to his voice? L'shalach es Yisrael, to send out Israel. Lo yadati es Hashem. I don't know any God. I don't know any Hashem. The Gamas Yisrael lo ashaleach. I certainly shall not send them out. And Moshe says, well, we're only asking for 3 days. Derech shloshes yamim b'midbar. We want to go for 3 days. We want to bring sacrifices. That's all. And Paro's response is, again, very harsh. Lama Moshe v'aron tafriu es ha'om imasav. Why, Moshe and Aaron, do you disturb the people from its work? L'chu l'sivloseichem. Go to your burdens. He doesn't want them to stop working. And therefore, that same day, Paro calls together all of the sergeants, all the nogsim ba'am, the taskmasters, the foremen, and says to them, no more will we supply the straw for them to make the bricks. They must supply their own straw. But they shall not decrease the number of bricks that they make in a day. Ki nirpim heim. These people are lazy. These people have too much time on their hands. Therefore they cry out saying, let us go and bring offerings to our God. Listen to this. Foolishness. Let the work be heavier upon the men, and let them engage in it, and let them not pay attention to false words. Paro seems to be bothered by the fact that they want to take off of work and go commune with their God. There seems to be another angle to his madness. There seems to be, besides the fear that they will overtake his land, he seems to be very irked by the fact that they want to go and commune with God. What is the meaning behind this obstinacy that Pharaoh has against the Jewish people? And here's where the Mesilas Yesharim steps in. I refer to beginning of chapter 2, page 14 and 15. Chapter 2, the virtue of vigilance, Midas Hazihirus, may have been translated in the older edition as watchfulness. And this is really the first of the steps that are explained in this sefer. Of course, Torah brings to Zahirus. But the first mita, the first quality, the first virtue, which is really defined and developed by Rabbi Lusato, is Zahirus. What is Zahirus? So I'll read a little bit from chapter 2. The concept of vigilance relates to a person's actions and affairs. He must contemplate and survey his actions and his conduct to see whether they are good or not, so as not to risk the loss of his soul, heaven forbid. He must not pursue his habits thoughtlessly, the way a blind man walks as in darkness. Zahirus, vigilance, is a concept which requires a person to think, which requires a person to contemplate, to survey his actions. The alternative to Zahirus is pursuing his habits thoughtlessly, the way a blind person walks in darkness. He goes on to develop this a little bit more. He says that animals don't even suffer from the malaise of people in this regard. Animals rarely put themselves in danger. They're always instinctively sharp and aware of what could be dangerous for them, and they flee from it. And yet people who don't think about where they're going, what they're doing, how they're acting, are endangering their souls. Maybe not their bodies. Maybe they are vigilant about crossing the street, about not eating something before you check the ingredients to make sure it's not poisonous. But are they vigilant about their souls, whether they intend to or whether it's totally unconscious that they're doing so? They are still in danger. He goes on to say that this is a malaise that mankind has suffered from throughout the generations. He cites the prophet Jeremiah, who bemoaned the evils of his generation, among whom this affliction was like a plague. There was a great epidemic in the time of Yirmiyahu. What was the epidemic? Blindness. Walking around in life without thinking where people are going. They paid no heed to their actions. They failed to consider whether they should embrace them or flee from them. They never stopped to think, okay, this is what I did today. Was it a good thing that I did? Was I spending my time wisely? Or wasn't I? The answer, yes or no, is not really the main issue. It's the thought process. Did I stop to think? How did I spend my time? After the day was over? Or, even better, before I started my day? Did I just wake up, put one foot in front of the other, and start my day habitually? Because this is the way I start my day every day. The way people stay on their course like a horse charging headlong into battle. In other words, they were constantly propelled forward by impulsiveness, the impulsiveness of their habits and ways, without leaving themselves time to critically examine their conduct. As a result, they fell into wrongdoing without being aware of it. This is the greatest malady, the greatest precariousness with which we go through life. We don't think. We don't stop to think. This is surely one of the shrewd ploys of the evil inclination, which relentlessly labors to burden the hearts of people until they are left with no spare moment. Why don't we take time to think? What's the number one answer? No time. No time to think. No spare moment. Got too much to do. No time to contemplate, to observe the path they are taking. This is a ploy of the evil inclination. This compulsiveness was kind of built into our hearts. This yetzer, this drive, was built into us. Why do we have this drive inside of us? Why do we always feel so compelled? Why do we always feel that we're so busy, that we have no time? Why? Because the evil inclination knows that if they would only minimally devote attention to their ways, they would no doubt immediately begin to regret their deeds, and this regret would intensify until they would abandon sin altogether. Just a little minimal amount of attention, a minimal amount of contemplation, of stopping, thinking, what we call cheshbon ha-nefesh, an accounting of our souls, would result, no doubt, almost like guaranteed, in the beginning of a process of spiritual growth that would lead to the greatest results. Now here comes the parsha. This is similar to the advice of that wicked Pharaoh who said, "The work shall be made harder for the men, so that they shall be busy doing it and not talking about trivialities." These trivialities are what we really should be doing, the spiritual work. But he was playing the role of the evil inclination. His intent was not only to deny them any respite from their work, to take note of their own plight or to plot against him. He wasn't just concerned about those earlier concerns that he had, fear for his kingdom, fear for his security, for his station, his position. But he wanted to prevent them from reflection. He didn't even want them to go into the desert and commune with God. Not that that had anything to do with his own job security, but he did not want them to realize that they are spiritual beings, because he didn't accept that. He didn't care about God, as it says, "Mi Hashem, who is God that I should listen to him?" And he didn't want them to do it either. This is precisely the device that the evil inclination employs against people. He is a master of war, trained in cunning, and it is only possible to escape him by acquiring great wisdom and foresight. Okay, so let's sum up what we have so far. We're talking about what goes down in our history books and our stories as one of the most significant events of our history, the exile in Egypt. Rabbi Luzzatto is telling us that this exile in Egypt is not an ancient history story. This is the most prevalent human struggle that we face every day of our lives. This state of toil, this state of work, of ceaseless subjugation, is what we are compelled and pushed by our own nature in order to avoid contemplation, which leads to spiritual growth. That's the meaning of Shibud Mitzrayim, of the subjugation of Egypt. Isn't that incredible? We are living in Mitzrayim too, every day. And we have a Pharaoh on top of us every day. And just as the Jewish people were in dire straits, and they needed an act of God and miracles that we see starting to unfold in Parshas Vaera, we're in that same boat until we start to get onto the process of Geula, of redemption. And how does it start? With minimal time devoted to contemplate and survey our deeds and our ways. If this is the definition of the Shibud, as Rabbi Luzzatto puts it, then the definition of the redemption is that solution. Cheshbon HaNefesh, taking the time, putting on the brakes, and saying, "I'm not too busy, no matter what I have to do, I'm not too busy to save my soul. I'm not too busy to think about the most important things in life." That's the redemption. Another way of putting it is that what we need in order to be free, is we need to step up and take responsibility to think and to make choices on our own, and not to live by impulse and by the power of habit or by the forces of society or by other people telling me what I need to do or by the advertisers telling me what I need to do. We need to be able to think about it and choose on our own. What we always laud as the power of free will is what is at stake here. We have to fight to be free. We have to fight to be able to exercise a little bit of free will. Free will means to be free to make the right decisions, using our say-so. Now, there's another aspect of this process of redemption, which we cannot leave out. Because if you ask the average person on the street, are you free, especially the average American, he will say, of course I'm free. What do you mean? I make choices every day. When I wake up, I decide what clothes to wear. I decide what I'm going to eat for breakfast. Nobody tells me what to do. I'm going to decide whether I'm going to take the sports car or the SUV. If I'm self-employed, I'll decide what time I'm going to leave the office. I decide which vacation we're taking next, decide where we're going to eat dinner tonight. Look at how free I am. Nobody's going to tell me what to do. What's the problem? What's wrong with that picture? What's wrong with this definition of freedom? Anybody?
Yeah, they made a real choice. They're just that their choices in the mundane that makes no difference.
Okay. Their choices about things, details, in areas where really I'm not free. Because the truth of the matter is that I still haven't sat down and decided which path am I taking in life. I'm still acting very much on impulse. I'm still acting very much by societal pressures. I'm still doing what everybody's telling me I must do. I must get that car. I must get clothes. I must take that trip. I must work harder and harder and longer hours, whatever it may be. In general, I'm really a slave to other forces. So I'm making decisions about details and how to pursue that. But am I really free to make important decisions? So what we really need to achieve freedom is not only the ability to make a decision, but the ability to know which decisions are important and what are the true values that I should choose in order, as Rabbi Luttazzo says, to be good to my soul, to do that which is truly good in life. So for that, we can't just rely on thought. We need to have some type of guidance. We need to have a framework. We need to have some guidance about the path with which to go. And that is why in Pirkei Avos, there's a statement there, a famous statement that says, in the sixth chapter, the second Mishnah, Ein lecha ben chorin, there is no ben chorin, elo mi she'osek the Torah, other than the person who's involved in Torah. The person who's involved in Torah will find freedom. Because he's got to take the time. He's got to take the time to think about his past. But at least he has the guidebook to give him the framework for making those decisions and making those thought processes. Without the objective standard, then what good is the decisions? I'm just going to be choosing trivialities. And that exactly is also borne out in the Torah. Because let's step back and look at the entire process of slavery to freedom. It wasn't just working for Pharaoh and then leaving. That wasn't the end stop. In Parsha Shmos, Moshe says to Hashem, when Hashem is talking to him at the burning bush, and he's telling him, I want you to go take the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim, Moshe was kind of asking, well, what for? Chapter 3, he asks a few questions. He asks a lot of questions. Much of it he was saying, why am I the person that I should be the one to speak to Pharaoh? But he was also asking questions about the mission. Chapter 3, verse 11, Vayomer Moshe el ha'alukim, Moshe said to God, Mi anochi ki eleich al Pharaoh. First of all, who am I to go before Pharaoh? V'chi otzi es b'nei Yisrael mi Mitzrayim. and that the Jewish people should go out of Mitzrayim at all. This is how Rashi interprets. He's asking, why should they go out? Is their life there going to be any better? So they won't be working for Pharaoh. What will they be doing? Vayomer ki yehyeh imach. So Hashem says to him, first of all, to answer your first question, who are you? Don't worry. I will be with you. So you are going to succeed because I will support you. But to answer your second question, why are we going out? V'zela chahaos. Ki anochi shalachticha. This is your sign that I have sent you. When you take the people out of Egypt, you will serve God on this mountain. There's a purpose for the Exodus. The purpose of the Exodus is to leave a life where you have absolutely no time or no freedom to think, to a life where you will be standing with God on the mountain and He will be communicating to you His Torah and His guidance, so that you will learn how to make the right choices. And that is the culmination of the Exodus. Not just being out in the wilderness and being free and say, now nobody's telling me what to do, now I can do whatever I want. That's not freedom either. Because then we're still stuck with the state of being driven by our own desires or our own whims, which is not necessarily going to put us in a better place. So the true meaning of the Exodus from Egypt is, it's really twofold. It's the freedom to think, the freedom to contemplate, not to go blindly, and the freedom to have access to the wisdom which provides that guidance. Both parts are important. I say this because even people that are Osek b'Torah, shall we say, people that are involved in Torah, people that are almost habituated in Torah observance, also have to struggle to be free. Everyone has to struggle to be free. The people that are not aware of the Torah have to struggle to find that meaning in their life, the source of our strength, because without that, no one can be free. And the people that are, so to speak, involved in the Torah, have to struggle to be free to not follow the Torah out of habit as well. They also have to make the time for the Cheshbon HaNefesh. Everyone has to struggle to be free. You know, in Parshas Va'era, Hashem hardened Pharaoh's heart. Why did He harden Pharaoh's heart? If He wouldn't have hardened his heart, He would have let the Jews go earlier. So the Ramban, a famous commentator, says that He had to harden Pharaoh's heart, because every time a plague came along, Pharaoh wanted to let the people go just to alleviate his suffering. In other words, He was going to make the right choice for the wrong reason. He was going to let them go. He was going to, so to speak, accept God's sovereignty for the wrong reason. And Hashem says, that's not a choice. That's not the right choice. I'm not going to let you let them go without accepting Me as God, without you coming to your knees, not because you're hurting, but because you realize that I am the God and you're not. And that's the same thing with Torah. We have to follow the Torah. We have to practice and do what the Torah says, not because we were pressured into it, not merely because our parents said that we must, or that the community, the neighborhood, makes it compulsory, otherwise you feel out of place. You have to do it. You have to do it for the right reasons. We have to study Torah, we have to observe the Torah because we've thought about it, because we accept in our minds that this is the word of Hashem, this is the way we should live. So everyone has to struggle to be free.
You're saying we have to do that every day.
We have to do that every day. Where does He say it? Acquiring Vigilance, chapter 5, page 31. We have mentioned involvement and preoccupation previously. When a person is preoccupied with worldly matters, his thoughts become constricted by the pressures that are imposed upon them, and it becomes impossible to pay attention to one's actions. It is true, worldly involvement is necessary for one's livelihood. However, this shouldn't necessitate increasing one's involvement to such an extent that it prevents him from serving the Eternal. To counter this, we have been commanded to designate specific times for Torah study. We previously mentioned that the most essential thing for attaining vigilance is Torah study. As Rabbi Pinchas Ben Yair said, Torah brings one to vigilance. One must also include here the specific times for the assessment of one's actions and their correction, as I have written above. So just like a person has to study Torah every day, whatever it is, the Mishnah, the Parsha, one has to set times for Cheshbon HaNefesh. A personal accounting. A Bechira session. A free choice session. Sit down and exercise your free will. What does that look like? It looks like this. Turn off the radio. Turn off the TV. Turn off the telephone. Sit down. Maybe take a pencil and a piece of paper and write down, here's some areas in my life that I could improve in. Here are some things that I'd like to strengthen. Here are some things that I'd like to weaken. Here are some things I'd like to do more of. Here are some things I'd like to do less of. That's it. 5 minutes.
It's a daily to-do list.
Yeah. I don't mean necessarily like a to-do list like that. Well, first I'm going to go to the grocery store and help with the shopping, and then I'm going to go to work. Not necessarily. We're talking in terms of, you know, I need to daven more. I need to spend more time with my children. I need to work on being more friendly. I need to spend time showing appreciation for my loved ones. Whatever it may be, you make it, because it's your thought process. It's your choice. But taking the 5 minutes and turning off the treadmill. What?
Turning off the outside world.
Turning off the outside world, turning on the inside world. That is the beginning of the process of freedom. And if we are students of Torah, we've got the access. We know how to find the values. We know what they are. We just now have to apply it. That is, and not exaggerating, and this is not homiletics, this is not poetry, this is in true depth, in true meaning, this is the story of Mitzrayim, the slavery in Egypt, and the Exodus. Slavery is not thinking, just going by automatic pilot, and redemption is having that freedom to think.
So if you're getting up in the morning and you're davening and you're davening in the afternoon, but you're not thinking about it,
that could be. Could be a form of Mitzrayim. It could be like a religious Mitzrayim, where I'm doing the mitzvah, but I'm not thinking about it. It's not affecting me, and it's not changing me. I still have my bad midos, let's say. So then, maybe my Cheshbon HaNefesh has to be in how to better understand what I'm saying, or addressing my character faults, and maybe selecting a course of study that will help me improve in that area. It could be anything. Somebody once asked a prominent Musar teacher today, what is the best Musar Sefer to read in our times? You know what he said? Use your mind. Yes, Dina.
I see here in the book that I had, that I said 28 years ago, that on chapter 2 and the others concerning the trait of watchfulness, I have written introspection.
Yeah.
So that's what the teacher told us, and that word... Mm-hmm. You know, meant a bit more than
introspection.
The other words.
Okay.
Introspection.
One other thing.
Yes.
What Randy's talking about is that once you've done this list and you sit down and you decide what you want to improve on and make it a realistic list, then the days to follow are what tests did God give me that tested those things,
mm-hmm.
and how did I respond? And did I do a good job? And that's basically what the Cheshbon is, I think.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's what that 5 minutes is. Mm-hmm. It probably would be at the end of the day, because that's when everything happens.
Mm-hmm. Well, you may want to do it at the beginning of the day, where you prepare yourself. Like you say, I know that this is going to come up. I know that the situation that tests me in this area is going to happen at about 10:15, or when I go out for lunch, or whatever it may be. So I'm going to be mentally prepared for that. So I will anticipate when it comes, and then I will be able to respond. So the ideal thing would really be at the beginning and at the end.
Yeah.
Now we're up to 10 minutes already. That's a really long time.
Well, I guess ideally what he's saying with vigilance and all this is that everything we do should be a conscious decision. Whenever we find ourselves doing anything by rote, like davening or benching or whatever, then we're out of the mode.
Right. And we can't expect perfection, and we can't even expect excellence. Because the default position, and I'm not insulting anybody, this is the default position of the human specimen, is, sad to say, is very little thought. We think about those things that we're habituated in thinking about. But in terms of thinking outside of the box, thinking about matters of the soul, we're very minimal on that. That's just the human being. So like I say, 5 minutes might sound like, big deal. But it is a big deal if you're used to doing zero. It's like the person who doesn't exercise. If you exercise a few times a week, that's a big deal. Mm-hmm. Anytime you make an improvement, a small improvement, it's a big deal if you haven't been doing it till now.
Typically, if I use the restroom, I say Yashir Yatsar. You know, it's a nice bracha to thank Hashem that everything is working, the whole body works. My oldest son told me in Israel, and he told me, I was saying it, I said it, and I felt like I was doing a nice thing, saying it and connecting with Hashem, but I would be walking. Mm-hmm. Like I'd come out of the restroom, and I'd walk, and you stand in one place, and you take the whatever time, if you're fast, you can do it in a minute, if you're slow, you do it in 2 minutes, whatever. And if you calculate the number of times throughout the day that you could do this, and just have that connection mm-hmm. in that place, and not move. It's like, I didn't know not to move. I didn't know to stand there. Mm-hmm. And standing somewhere, it forces you to think.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you don't want to stop.
Yeah.
You don't want to stop moving. You need to move.
If
I don't move, I'm going to die. You know, I got to move. So sitting, that was like an example of something that you can do all day long that reminds you to focus. Mm-hmm. It may not be as good as writing down, and it may not be, but, you know, if you take that time, that's such a simple thing.
Right.
But it's so overwhelming the whole day.
Yeah. Yes. Our son has a little plaque on the wall that has the Asher Yatzar outside the bathroom. But it was given to him by somebody in Alabama. It says, and when you say this, have in mind a refuah shlema for so-and-so.
Mm.
And so that's another thing that helps you think about what you're doing. And you can put anybody in the so-and-so spot.
In the dialogue between Moses and Hashem, chapter 3, paragraph 12, the reason for going out is given by Hashem two reasons. And the second one is that you will serve God on this mountain. The key word here that I'm focusing on is serve.
Mm-hmm.
He's releasing the Jews from one form of servitude in Egypt into another form of servitude.
Very good. Very, very good. Very good. That's true. Freedom is actually achieved when one is serving God. In other words, if we had to sum up what we talked about today, would it be fair to say that the less busy a person can be, the better?
No.
Not necessarily. No. Because if we're not busy working, but we're busy doing idle things, then we're no freer. In fact, like you said, we have to keep moving. You know, I think that we were born, you know, some people were born to shop. We were born to work. It says that in one of the verses. The sages, Adam la amal yulad, a person was born to toil. So I think that's in our destiny, that's in our genetics. So we're going to have to work. The question is, what are we going to work for? So to work for Pharaoh, where we work, we work, we work, we work, but we accomplish nothing. You've probably heard, I've probably said it before, that Pharaoh didn't even need anything built. He would have the Jews building cities. According to the Midrash, he had them build the cities and the buildings and the edifices on ground that was not strong enough to hold these edifices. And shortly after they were completed, they would fall. And that was his plan. He didn't need anything done. He just needed them to be busy. Busy with busy work that didn't accomplish anything. That's servitude. That's subjugation. That's bondage. We're working, we're working, we're not accomplishing anything. To serve God, on the other hand, to be busy with mitzvahs, to be busy with purposeful things, even when we work, even when we go to our jobs and we earn our living, it's part of our productivity of building a life, supporting a family, supporting the needy and institutions and so forth. Everything that we do is purposeful. So we're never going to be idle. We're never going to sit around and have nothing to do. But the freedom comes when, instead of being osek, instead of being involved in trivial things that don't accomplish and don't achieve, we're involved in the Torah. We're involved in a good servitude, serving Hashem.
So there are different qualities of servitude.
Right. And above all, serving with thought. Rabbi Weinberg was once sitting at his dining room table with students. Friday night, he came, they all sat down. The Rebbetzin, she should live and be well, came out with a plate of luscious chocolate cake. And she placed it down. She says to the boys, please help yourselves, make a bracha, enjoy. One student reaches over for one of the pieces. And Rabbi Weinberg says, why did you choose that piece? And he was startled by the question. So he says, I don't know. I didn't think about it. I just picked it. He says, never do anything without thinking about it. Always think before you do. Think about taking the chocolate piece. I want the biggest piece. Good. You thought about it. That was a decision that you made. Good decision. But always think about what you're doing.
Well, sometimes you thought about it, but you don't want to admit it.
But if you think about it, you realize
it's Shabbos.
That's the highest level.
It's right. Shabbos. It's a mitzvah to enjoy.
That's my
fine.
That's
the or I'm hungry. But it, literally, right. It's better to think, even if you're going to do less than no thought at all. I love chocolate cake. That's why I think. Shabbos. Be free, everyone.